education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Monday morning show on WGTDHD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today's program was pre-recorded. And we welcome you to the morning show here on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things today. And at the heart of this story that we tell today is something unfortunate, a cancer diagnosis, and of the reality that cancer means in the lives of so many different people, not only for the person directly affected by cancer, but everyone who loves that person and cares about them. And we want to talk today not only about that, but about courage and determination in the face of a cancer diagnosis, and about how inspiring it is when a community rises up to try to support those who are contending with something as difficult as cancer. Certainly making a very, very big difference in the community of Racine towards this goal is the Koss Family Foundation, Racine-based nonprofit public charity supporting various members of the community who are confronting a cancer diagnosis, providing financial support, non-medical financial support of all kinds, which really can make a huge difference in terms of the well-being of people contending with this. We're going to be talking today, first of all, with two people with the last name of Koss, Becky Koss and Steve Koss, who not only are at the heart and soul of the Koss Family Foundation, but also confronting this reality in their own lives. And out of that, we want to talk about a very special event that's going to be coming up on Saturday, the 11th of March, an exciting fundraiser for the Koss Family Foundation that also involves one of the most vibrant centers of art in Racine, the gallery on 16th and the 16th Street Studios, housed at the Racine Business Center. So from the Racine Business Center and 16th Street Studios, we have Emily Montgomery, and also joining us in the studios, Samira Gadisis, who is gallery director for Gallery on 16th, and her own printmaking studio is part of that. So a warm welcome to all four of you. We are so glad that all of you can be here on the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wish we didn't have to start with something as unhappy as cancer, but that is where this conversation, of course, needs to begin. Tell us about where that story began. Steve, do you want to tell us about it? At what point this became a reality for you?
Well, back in 2015, I wasn't feeling good, and they thought I had a gallbladder, wasn't it? Gallbladder.
Right. They thought you needed your gallbladder out. You had gall.
So, went to the hospital and basically did some tests and some scans and found out that there was no blockage there, and they've seen something else there, and By the end of that night, I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, stage two.
Hmm.
Which, you know, kind of, you always say it's not going to happen to you, you know, and kind of hits you in the face, and you're kind of thrown in this whirlwind of things start to happen, and I don't think you can really absorb it all at that particular moment. And so we went to Frater and started a vigorous campaign of chemotherapy and radiation for 3 months. Hopefully, and the outview of that was to see if they could perform surgery on me after that treatment. And after that treatment, it had went to stage four, to my liver and my lungs. After that, we had went to a cancer treatment center for second opinions, and so that's currently where I'm getting treated now. So after going through almost a year of chemotherapy, my tumor markers were down to like 49 or...
In the normal range.
In the normal range, which was good news. But as a doctor reminded me, it's a sleeping giant.
Mm.
And a sleeping dragon. So it was really nice. I had all last summer off of chemotherapy.
Wow.
So I got to really enjoy life.
Mm.
And we've been trying to do that. And I have a going to be a 9-year-old son. And so we're trying to take some trips and spend some time with him.
Sure.
So as of today... I went back before Christmas hoping to get good news again. Well, my tumor markers are up to about 1,200 right now. So I'm back on chemotherapy, and we're going to see where that takes us.
Hmm.
But, you know, I look at every day as a blessing and don't take anything for granted, and I still look to the future.
Very good. So in other words, for you, this regimen of chemotherapy, which I'm sure is not fun, but has had some significant effect in terms of at least slowing this and buying you what is so very, very precious, which is the gift of time.
Right. Yep. And that's what it's all about. It's not, you know, right now it becomes quality of life, you know, and how long you can live and cherish that.
And how well you can live.
Right. Exactly.
I'm sure that one thing you, you're better equipped than any of us to be grateful for the small things. I should think one thing that you're perhaps grateful for is that chemotherapy is not what it once was. That even just a few years ago, just the word conjured up such horrors because it was as yet a relatively new science, not yet understood fully, and it could be have such devastating effect, and my understanding anyway is that they've come a long, long way, and that chemotherapy itself, as it does the good it's supposed to do, does not quite cause what it used to. That being said, I'm sure it's still a very difficult road to travel.
Well, it is, and we have to remember that cancer affects everybody different. You know, I mean, I have pancreatic cancer, but someone could be next to me and have pancreatic cancer and be completely different.
Mm.
All depending on where it is and how your body reacts to it. The same thing applies to chemotherapy. So there could be five of us on the same cocktail, they call it, because they mix chemos together. And each one of us could have different side effects or react different to that same medication.
Mm.
So that's what's kind of unique about it. I've been pretty lucky to the first 3 months that I was on chemo with some pretty strong stuff. I was on a pump and I would take it home for the weekend, 24 hours a day. They were pumping it into me. And then that was a very brutal chemo.
Hmm.
Now I'm on a more, well, for me, my body, I can't talk for anybody else. But right now, the chemo I'm on right now is pretty light on my body. So it's not as abusive as the other chemo I was on. I mean, it still isn't fun, but you know, the hardest thing about this whole thing
Sorry.
The hardest thing for me was I actually cut my hair off.
You cut your hair off. You took it off yourself.
Yep. I thought I was prepared for that.
Hmm.
But regardless of the chemo, I accepted that fine. Something about cutting your hair off.
Hmm. That made it real? Is that, or that's...
That was, that made it real.
Hmm.
And there's other people I talked to that said the same thing, you know, that once that day came when your hair was falling out, you know, in respect to other people, I wanted to cut it off. So if I was out in public at a restaurant or someplace, that my hair wasn't falling all over.
Right.
So it was very hard. My nephews. I came over and helped cut my hair.
They all shaved their heads too.
Wow.
Even the one in Texas was on the iPad, and his wife was shaving his head and Skyping with us the whole time.
Wow.
It became a little family event. And all the boys were there doing it.
Wow. So it's, on the one hand, it's a road you're traveling alone and yet not alone at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Becky, I suspect this is, just as Steve never imagined this was going to be part of his life, nor could you have imagined this is going to be part of something that you would be confronting. Tell us what this road has been like for you and the ways in which you have tried to be everything you need to be for Steve through a road like this.
Well, when you know, when you're a nurse and you see blood work and you see symptoms, you see too much. As a spouse, you try not to see that. So the night before he was supposed to go in for his ultrasound, for the gallbladder ultrasound, I had a feeling. I knew. And when...
Excuse me. So are you have some training as a nurse? Is that...
I've been a nurse for almost 18 years.
Oh, wow. Yes. I didn't realize that or remember that. So,
yes.
Okay, please continue.
So the night before his we got the results, I just had this feeling, and he had gone to, we had to see the surgeon, and I called a friend. I said, you know, I think it's pancreatic cancer. And then when we got the results, they said, no, it's his gallbladder. He's, you know, the gallbladder is enlarged, and we need to take this out. And I said, oh, we're in the surgeon's office. And I said, thank God I was wrong. He said, why? I said, because I thought it was pancreatic cancer, not your gallbladder. And he said, well, what's with pancreatic cancer? I said, well, that one's not good. And then the surgeon came in and said, there's no, I can't find any stones in the gallbladder. I want to go do a CT scan to look for rogue stones in outlying areas, maybe in a bile duct. And I was like, not a big deal, until they came back and said, we aren't doing surgery. We're going to get biopsies. And then I knew the spouse in me had taken over the nurse.
Right.
So then you're just, when you're, I was talking to a friend about this, who was also a nurse, whose brother is going through cancer treatment. I said, you know, as the family member, as the spouse, all that, those years of being a nurse, and that kind of goes out the window a little bit, because you're so focused on what you can do as the family member, as a spouse, and you're not always thinking in those medical ways that you've been trained to do, and you just do everything you can. I mean, there was, when he was first diagnosed, there was nights a coworker of mine said, you know, you can't post on Caring Bridge at 4 a.m. You should probably be sleeping. And you don't sleep. You're up all night and you're trying to figure all this out because it's a whole new world. And getting everything in order, getting, you know, you still have those day-to-days, but you still have to go to those doctor's appointments, figure out this new schedule and treatment plans. And we have a little boy, and we still had to get him to first grade and try to get his, keep his life in order, too.
Mm. Wow. I'm trying to figure out if you're grateful that you have this background of understanding. And, Steve, I'm curious if you're grateful for that, too, that I mean, for as hard as that makes it, perhaps it takes away a little of the just bewilderment and confusion that for just, you know, when somebody's just a, you know, a bricklayer and a baker or whoever, I mean,
right,
that know nothing about this world, that you're suddenly on a part of sort of first person. What kind of difference has that made in terms of being able to navigate this difficult road?
I think it makes a big difference because, you know, you go, I have that background and I understand what is happening, where it can, there's a lot of terms, there's a lot of tests, there's a lot of foreign, it's like a foreign language when you walk into a hospital and you're going for treatment. And, you know, I have the understanding, I know what that is, and I can explain it because, you know, when you're, when it, that diagnosis is you, you're hearing it, you're listening to them talk, but it's kind of like the Charlie Brown teacher. You know, you hear it, but it's like wah, wah, wah.
Right,
and it doesn't all sink in. So having that that understanding, the basic understanding, I was never an oncology nurse. I was, you know, never. I'm a diabetes educator now, but just having that basic understanding makes it much easier waters to navigate, because when you talk to people who don't have that understanding, you know, they, it's definitely a benefit, you know, because they don't understand what's going on, or they get confused about things and really don't know what they're doing. They're just doing whatever the doctor wants them to.
Mm.
And you might not have that insight to go, well, what other options are there, or what does this really mean?
Right. I have a brother who suffered a traumatic brain injury several years ago, fortunately made a very good recovery, but I have a sister who's a medical doctor, and there were many times that we were so grateful that in our midst, in our complete ignorance, that she was there to explain what this was or that was, and it made a dark road a little bit brighter to walk. Steve, what kind of difference do you think it's made that Becky has, in addition to all of her love for you, also this knowledge of medical procedures and terminology and so on? What kind of difference has it made in being helpful to you?
Well, first of all, I have a beautiful wife. And then I have a very good friend. And then I have a nurse. So, you know, and before this happened, you know, the nurse was at the hospital. And my friend and my wife came home.
Right. Interesting way to put it.
So now all three of them in our life every day.
Right.
So, and it really helps me when she can explain some of the things, because, you know, I mean, these doctors are all in a hurry, and sometimes, you know, I don't understand at all, especially when you start going on chemo, your brain doesn't function like it used to.
Hmm.
So it's really been great help that, you know, my wife, nurse, my best friend can explain that to me.
Right. I'm sure that makes a big, big difference. So let's talk about the Koss Family Foundation. When was that created?
Well, I'll talk about the first part, and then my wife can talk about how she started it. Back in March... No, August, my...
Of 2015,
my niece, Tammy Jensen, had planned a benefit for me to help pay for some medical bills. And to my surprise, we had, I mean, I knew I've been in, run a couple businesses in my life, and I've been around, so I know a lot of people, but I had no clue that roughly 900 people were going to show up.
Wow.
From out of state. I mean, they were coming in from everywhere. Wow. And so I was really grateful for that, for those people helping us out. So after that, my wife kept saying she was going to have this Christmas present for me. You know, she always dangles stuff out there, you know. It doesn't really drive me crazy, but it does her. But, you know, I was kind of like, okay, where are we going, to Tahiti? Or, you know, I'm thinking, oh, we're going to take a trip. Or I'm an avid fisherman, so I'm thinking, oh, maybe she's going to buy me a new bass boat or something. You know,
right.
He bought his own bass boat.
Okay.
But so then she can take over from there how she wanted to, how she started the foundation up.
Wow. I have a feeling that was the Christmas surprise.
It was. It was. I tried to figure out how I could give back, because it was just overwhelming. You know, we knew we had great friends, but we didn't know half of the people there were not just close friends and family. Over half. There were just people who saw it, people who wanted to help, just community members. And this wasn't even held in the city. It was held in Union Grove. So it wasn't just people, you know, from Racine, the city of Racine itself. It was outlying areas. And so I was just kind of researching. And, you know, as a nurse, I don't have much business background. So I was at Barnes & Noble with a book on how to start up a nonprofit. And I texted my two closest friends and said, let's go to dinner. I have an idea. And I'm sure they thought I was absolutely crazy. And we worked on it, and we'd go out to dinner once a week and just really, you know, follow the steps and I started looking and researching, and went to Marquette University, their law school, and got free law help, and just started the whole process. And we incorporated December of 2015, and we presented Steve with those incorporation papers, and we have them framed, and that was his Christmas present, was the foundation in his name to help other families.
Wow.
Luckily, through MLINK, we found out, because we were just a startup, we could fill out the short form for the 501c3 and not the 30-some page long form we had been slaving away at. So by May of 2016, we became a nonprofit, and it was our labor of love and support. And we had so many people just help us with financial donations to pay for all of it, because it's expensive to get a foundation off and running.
Before you've even taken in the money that you want to disperse, you have to lay out some money.
Of money to, you know, all the incorporation fees. There's so many different things that you need, that luckily we had free law help with that, and it was fantastic.
Wow. So that was a heck of a lot better than new fishing poles or whatever, or golf clubs.
Yep, it was unbelievable. And, you know, going through cancer, you know, going to the hospital every day, which I did back in 2015, I lived there. You get to meet people, a lot of people. There's a lot of sad stories out there. There really is. You know, we just heard another one the other day. A person passed away in a hotel because they took his house. And so there's really a lot of bad cases out there. And there's a lot of good foundations out there, you know. And you can take a trip, and that's great for building memories. And they're all good foundations. But by the end of the day, that stress level of making sure you have a home, if it's your child that has cancer, or even if it's your spouse, to be able to maintain that just normal way of living.
Let alone the special perks.
Exactly.
Keeping regular life going.
Right. Just going down the same path you were going becomes pretty rough.
Right.
And so I'm really happy that this foundation, I'm looking to the future. I probably won't see it, but and look into the future where we can make a huge, huge difference on people's lives in the future.
Well, and in this way that a lot of us sort of on the outside, not directly impacted by this, it just doesn't even dawn on us. I mean, we might be so caught up just in the headlines that you forget about underneath just the more sort of normal story that we want sustained, that needs to be sustained. So that's kind of the focus then of your foundation.
Yes, to pay the non-medical expenses. Most hospitals have, you know, patient assistance programs to help with medical bills, but when you're losing wages for, you know, to go to treatment or take your child to treatment, just not being able to work, how do you pay the mortgage? How do you pay for the car that's going to get you there, the gas that'll get you there? Your kids still have school. They still have to pay for books. You need utilities. You need a phone to get those phone calls, to make those doctor's appointments. So that's where we come in, just to help maintain that normalcy, because it takes, when you have a terminal medical diagnosis, the fast track to get disability is still 6-7 months. And you're not working. There's no other income coming in. We both had very successful careers, and, you know, this takes that away. It doesn't matter, you know, how much money you make or anything. When you can't work, when you're not making that money, those bills are still there, plus the added expense of the treatment.
Right, that reality. And again, it's something the rest of us just aren't mindful of.
Right, and we never, you know, up until 2 years ago, we never would have thought that, you know, you don't realize those expenses.
Right. So now that the Costs Family Foundation is off the ground, yeah, so now it becomes about the matter of spreading the word and of inviting people to demonstrate their own generosity. What kind of response has there been thus far?
Oh, there's been a huge response. We've made great connections with different organizations like Salmon Unlimited, the now closed Curbs Racine, King for a Cure, and now these two ladies here, Emily and Samira, who have been huge supporters. So just different places like that, you know, people have just stepped up and really tried to help us as much as possible and to get this off the ground, because cancer touches everybody. You know, you can't, if you walked into a room, you could ask people, you know, raise your hands if you know somebody, if you've worked with somebody who has cancer, or if anybody in their family had cancer. Somebody's going to raise their hand. And so once you tell them what you're doing, that passion is there, and they're so wanting to help other people because they know what it's like.
I suppose it says something about what people think of you, Steve, that that this has taken off as it has.
Well, I don't know whether it's good or bad. They think about me, but you know, it looks like it's good. It's funny that you say that, because I don't know her last name, but she, Gretchen, she ran Curbs in Racine. And I just seen her a couple weeks ago. And I said, you know what, Gretchen? I said, I'm kind of looking at you that you got us rolling in this whole foundation as far as raising money. And it was just, she invited us to a Curbs event. And then from there we met Mary Lee Hetland, which works on the Sam Unlimited board, and so it just kind of like spiraled from there who we met at that one particular event, and it just blossomed into, you know, this person knew this person, hey, this person can help you, let me introduce you to this person, and it just one after the other. We had an event in Fall Festival, Cost Family Fall Festival in October. And there was, our vice president of the executive board called Pumpkin Farm in the middle of Wisconsin. Well, I ended up driving up there because they were donating 500 pumpkins to us. And they said, never met these people before, and they said, whatever you need in the future, call us. And doesn't matter, just pick up the phone and call us.
Wow.
And we'll help you out. I mean, so that's what it's been all about. We had a bunch of pumpkins left over, of course, but we gave them to the zoo for their event that day, and it was we gave away free pumpkins. It was so it's all good all the way around.
Wow. So are you in the business yet of dispersing funds, or is that down the road once that you've gotten the foundation to a certain place financially?
Right now we have, last August, right after we became a 501c3, we were contacted by somebody, and we just accepted that person's application, and we will be giving out our first monies. Mm. So it's slow because we have, limited finances, but we're hoping that with our next event, we will be set up to put up money, give money out once a month to one family. And that's our goal for this fiscal year of 2017. So our application isn't out publicly yet, but if we are contacted, we have been giving that application out.
Right.
Because we don't have the funds yet.
Of course.
We are really trying and working super hard to get those funds and to get to help the families.
Right. Well, and I can't imagine how good it will feel for you to sign that first check.
Right.
I mean, in reverse to the moment when you cut off your hair, and it's like made it real. It's like the moment you get to sign that first check, that will make this real in a way that it's real now, but it really becomes real at that moment.
Then our vision is there. It's complete, and we know that we're on the right track. We're doing the right thing, and that goal will be met. And I have it. I have everything. We're having the meeting, and that should be like within soon that will be finalized.
And a red letter day indeed.
Yes.
For those of you just joining us, we're speaking today on The Morning Show with Becky Koss and Steve Koss, and talking about the Koss Family Foundation. And also with us today in the studios, Samira Gadisis and Emily Montgomery, who are with Gallery on 16th and the 16th Street Studios in Racine. And that is going to be the location for a very, very special event coming up on the 11th of March, which will be, one hopes, a spectacular fundraiser for the Koss Family Foundation. So, Emily Montgomery, I think at this point we want to draw you into the conversation and find out how you and the studios on 16th became part of this effort to support the Koss Family Foundation.
Well, Becky and Steve approached Racine Business Center to rent space for their foundation. Steve's family has a long history in our building. His father, Bob Koss, worked for my family's business, Racine Industries, for my entire life. I don't know how many years, but until he retired.
Yeah. Small world.
Right. Well, it's all family. And so when they approached us for space, I was really excited because when they presented what their foundation does, actually, ironically, I could be their poster child for being a recipient of what they want to present to people. I was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in my 30s. I had 5 children. I was still nursing a baby. And we were running a farm ministry in Minnesota.
A what?
A farm ministry. We brought inner city kids from North Minneapolis to our farm, gave them a farm. And
wow.
Yeah, and so when I was diagnosed with cancer, I chose to do an alternate route, and I didn't take chemo. So everything that I did, my treatments, were all out of pocket. My husband had a job, but we were a family of 7. Running a farm, we were raising support as missionaries for this farm ministry, living on very little income, and we ended up having to sell the farm 3 years after my diagnosis to pay all of the debt that was incurred through my alternative treatments. Hmm. It obviously worked because 15 years later, I'm still here.
Wow.
So when they moved into the building, I was super excited because had there been a Cost Family Foundation for someone like me 15 years ago, we might not have had to uproot our five children and move from our farm and have to give up this ministry that we were doing.
Hmm.
So it was just a natural fit for them because now I'm super passionate about what they're doing. We had, in the building a few years ago, we had hosted a wine tasting party for Racine Montessori School and got the artists involved in that. They donated artwork. They opened their studios. It really lent a lot of ambiance to the wine tasting evening, and it was quite a success. So when Becky and Steve started renting from us, and I told them, we were walking around the building, and I showed them the area where the 16th Street Studios are in the building, and told them about this wine tasting party, and I think that probably planted the seed in their minds of what kind of fundraising they could do. And Samira, being our gallery director extraordinaire, obviously brought her into it, but she is an amazing designer with her Black Eyed Press studio, and she's created all the artwork for it and has just been doing an amazing job. So for the evening, Art in the Speakeasy, we're again inviting our artists to open their studios, which will be the third and fourth floor where the 16th Street Studios are mostly located in the building, is going to be a speakeasy. And you're going to have a password to get up there through the old freight elevator. But on the second floor, where the gallery is located, we're going to have an art auction in the gallery and then a little art sale in the hallway. So I'm sure Samira can expound upon that.
Sounds like great fun. First of all, what was your reaction when Emily approached you with this notion?
Well, Emily sent a letter to all of the artists asking us if we'd be willing to. As you know, everybody here has said, cancer touches everyone. And I've lost several friends, my mentor in the art world, but in August of 2015, lost my mother to brain cancer.
Oh.
So everything's pretty fresh when no one in your family has ever had cancer before and you lose your mother with 9 days notice. She fell, we learned she had cancer, and she was gone. She was 76.
Wow.
So for me, it's a no-brainer. When someone steps up and says, I have a heart to do this while I'm struggling through it, what is your answer?
Mm. And you're speaking about Becky right now.
Becky and Steve. It's a matter of not... am I willing to? It's a matter that I'm compelled to.
Of course.
So,
in other words, so many people in a similar situation would just would focus on nothing beyond their own pain, their own struggles, their own needs, and here they are, these open-hearted people thinking about others and the ordeal that they're facing too,
and sharing their story. I mean, if we live in a community, we should share our story. And transparency is few and far between. We don't see it as often as I think sometimes we need to. So it wasn't really even like, oh, I have to think about this. It was just something I jumped into. I happened to love the 1920s, 1930s in terms of what was happening in the world and in art, in Art Deco and Art Nouveau. So it was a very easy transition to design some art for them inspired by Art Nouveau ironwork that was around even in our area, but as well in France, and the posters, the French Art Nouveau posters. So I just designed something. I had no idea they would like it that well. It was just fun to do. And we've kind of we've decided to go all in the building. I mean, it's a great place to talk about having a speakeasy. If you think about the history of the building and the things that were being created in that time period already in the building and what exists there now in terms of artists. So we're starting to have a really wonderful response from our artists and artists in the community. For the gallery, it'll be the first time we show artists from outside our 16th Street Studios. So we've put out a regional call. And we're inviting every artist we know to think about giving. And one of the really lovely things about the Kost family is that they're not interested in it being just about the Kost Family Foundation. So in terms of the auction, they're splitting the funds for the artists. So when we ask an artist to donate a piece, we're not asking them to give away their entire investment. They can choose to. But otherwise, and we've asked for them to donate only 25% of those proceeds so that they get some of their work back. And I wasn't sure how it would go over, but we're seeing artists step up, both inside the building. There'll be several studios open, but also outside. People who've been touched have said, how do I help? And that's the biggest question right now.
Right. By the way, it may seem ludicrous to ask you this, but if we have any younger listeners, they might not even understand what a speakeasy was and is. So we should probably clarify that term.
So we were thinking about the Prohibition era when alcohol was outlawed. And actually, this is really Becky and her event planner Deb's idea, but easy to run with as an artist. And so the idea is that the art auction and the sale will be what was then a legitimate front for an organization that was selling illegal alcohol
behind
closed
doors.
Right. So we wanted the artists who are donating to have access to the sale of their art. It's gratifying when you sell a piece or you auction a piece to be there. So we figured that would make a nice legitimate front for the wine and beer tasting, which will be on the upper floors. And I think you know, we've asked people to think about wearing 1920s fashion as well. So we'll have volunteers working as bellhops and elevators and ushering them through the halls and take the time to help them decorate and make sure that the building is set up in a very time-oriented way.
Right. So explain kind of how the evening will unfold, the kind of the schedule of what this evening is going to include.
Well, it's going to be from 6 till 10, and if you're familiar with the Racine Business Center at all, there's what we call the tunnel, and we're going to funnel that all the guests in that entrance. They will drive in, get out of their cars, and the driver can go through the tunnel and out to the parking lot, but we will usher the guests to the passenger elevator, take them to the second floor. We're not going to have the entire building open like we do for Open House or Get Behind the Arts or Open House Racine County. We're really keeping it more confined. So on the second floor, we have merchandisers. One of them, Madame D's, who deals in vintage clothes and jewelry, is going to be open. I'm not sure about our other merchandisers yet, but the gallery is on the second floor. So that's the legit, as Samira was saying, that's the legit area. And then the pour will start at 6:30. And then and that you have to have a ticket to access, plus a password, because this is a speakeasy. So you got to get past the goons who will be working the freight elevator. Give them the password that will be available on the Kost Family Foundation website. And then the elevator operator will take you up to either the third or fourth floor, and that's where the beer and wine tasting and the food that Danny's catering is going to be providing. Yep, there'll be music, and then that will go. I think the last pour is at 9:30. Yep, the auction will be at 8:30, and it should just be a good time. I've already got my 20s dress from Lorna Copia is carrying 1920s era dresses, which are really fun. Mm. So we're really encouraging people to just get in the spirit of it, and it should be a good evening. We're looking forward to it.
We are
trying to gather up volunteers.
Right, and Deb, like Samira said, Deb Glass, our events coordinator, she is putting her heart and soul into this, and every event that she has done for us, she is doing a fantastic job, and this idea has just grown from her idea, and the event is, I just can't wait to see it. It's going to be like stepping into like Boardwalk Empire, or, you know, just era, and, you know, watch out for Nucky Thompson or El Capone.
Exactly. Well, and being that the building was built in the 1800s, it lends to that ambiance, a big old warehouse. For some people, it might be a little spookier at night, and I think it'll just, it's going to be fun.
Oh,
it's going
to sounds be a great. Great. Time. Well, and how great that it's an event that is important with a very serious message at its heart, and yet an event that's going to be joyous and fun and amazing in every single respect. So for somebody listening who does not want to miss out on all of the fun on March 11th, and more important, does not want to miss out on this opportunity to help support the Koss Family Foundation, what do they do?
They could go to our website, www.kossff.org.
And that's K-O-S-S.
Yes, K-O-S-S-F-F, like familyfoundation.org.
So K-O-S-S-F-F.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Tickets are on sale on our website. They could go to the Racine Business Center, and that's cash or check only, and they could purchase them there. And Uncorked, who is sponsoring the wine and beer tasting, they're also a ticket sales site.
So they can go right to
they
Uncorked.
They could go right to Uncorked.
Very good. And Emily, remind our listeners of exactly where the gallery is located. I mean, if someone knows the heart of Racine, how they get to it.
Well, Racine Business Center is on 16th Street between Junction and Memorial Drive. If they want to come to the gallery on Tuesdays and Thursdays when we're open, we're located on the second floor, closer to the 1515 entrance, so more on the western side of the building on the second floor in the main hallway. The evening of the event, though, they will be ushered there. We're going to have volunteers at strategic locations. Sometimes the building can be a little intimidating for people to find, but because we are going to control where people are going more, they'll be filtered through the second floor, and there'll be no problem finding it.
Excellent. It is a great event in so many respects, and again, it's going to be happening on March 11th at the gallery on 16th and 16th Street Galleries, housed in the Racine Business Center. Emily Montgomery and Samira Gadisis, both involved, and of course, Steve Koss and Becky Koss. We are so grateful for you joining us today on the morning show, sharing your story so movingly. We wish you the very, very best, with all that stretches ahead for you, and we certainly wish you well with this marvelous undertaking with the Koss Family Foundation, which we know will make a very, very positive difference in the lives of all kinds of people. Thank you for being here. We were honored to have you on the morning show.
Thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow's morning show is going to include a preview of a riveting documentary that airs tomorrow night on PBS on the series Independent Lens. It looks back at a terrifying summer day in 1966, just over half a century ago, when America suffered its first mass shooting, when a lone gunman placed himself in the tower overlooking the campus of the University of Texas in Austin and began opening fire on innocent bypassers. And by the time the carnage was done 90 minutes later, over a dozen people had been killed. This documentary airs tomorrow night, and I will be speaking to the writer and director Keith Maitland on tomorrow's morning show. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack.